I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. That's my Bing.
That's a good one.
It's okay. It gets better as the holiday season moves deeper into the holiday season. But yeah, that's my Bing.
I've been listening to a lot of Christmas music, not on purpose.
I have on purpose.
Yeah, no, and I wanted to say that I know, although I haven't seen it so much this year, I've seen a little bit of people complain more about holiday music being played earlier. And I think I haven't seen as much of that this year as in past years. And I don't know, I guess it doesn't bother me. At one point, maybe it did, but I don't. So I feel like, you know, we're in the season of people complaining about too much holiday music or holiday music too early. But I'm fine with it. And where I listen to it most is in the car in the tri-state area here. There's Light FM and my son listens to that. So whenever I'm driving my son around, that's what we listen to. And it's mostly pop stuff from the 80s and recent pop stuff too. And it's fine. I don't hate listening to it. I mean, like any radio, it's a very limited playlist. However, they start playing all Christmas music starting Thanksgiving right up until Christmas and probably even after Christmas a little bit. Nothing else, just all Christmas stuff. And I like it because with all of the old tunes and with all of the, you know, there's just a lot. It harkens back to a different time and it's much more, it's great like jazz arrangements and big band arrangements, you know, because they play all the Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Johnny Mathis, like all of that stuff. And then like even the newer stuff, you have like Michael Bublé and Harry Connick Jr. And they're all big band arrangements too. So even if it's the newer stuff, it's these awesome, like kind of like we were talking about in a recent Just the Two of Us with the country music stuff. Those were well-written songs, like of a craft, and not even counting the arrangement, but just like the tune and the lyrics were of a higher quality, or in my opinion, a higher quality. And now you have these great big band arrangements or string arrangements, and it's just, it's great to listen to in the car. So to me, like, I don't mind the Christmas stuff because it's great hearing all the big band stuff.
You know, it's funny because you do see complaints about Christmas music on social media. Or holiday music, whichever you prefer. And I think it's funny because, you know, it always brings to mind the line from, oh gosh, I'm blanking on her name because I'm just terrible with names. Rock star, rock singer, singer-songwriter. She did All I Want to Do Is Have Some Fun. Sheryl Crow.
Yes.
You know, she has the line in a song, if it makes you happy, it can't be that bad. I'm always... when I look at social media and I see people just, you know, having a fit because people are listening to holiday music, I look at it from a standpoint of why does it matter to you what other people do? Like, why it makes other people happy.
Mm-hmm.
It makes them feel good. It's not hurting you.
Yeah.
So why do you have to shit on it?
Exactly.
And I don't get that.
I don't either, and maybe it's just because I'm on social media less, or I've unfollowed a lot of people. Maybe that's part of it too. But I feel like I don't see quite as much of that. I feel like I'm seeing less of it. But again, that might be my own.
Yeah, I think it's just because you're not there. Yeah,
maybe that's it.
Because there's a lot of it out there, you know. And it's kind of funny. I always listen to holiday music this time of year just because, you know, I like the holiday music and it's like you said, they're well-structured songs. They're catchy. You sing along with them and, you know, you get your toe tapping and I love Big Bang. I love Big Band. Mm-hmm. And there's tons of that, right? And so I found myself actually listening to the jazz holiday channel on Spotify. Mm-hmm. Because there was so much jazz and big band and different things, and it's just such a good mix of music. Like, we have the station here that does the holiday music too. It's Cozy 101, I want to say. And when I didn't have Spotify and I didn't have satellite and I didn't have all these other options, yeah, I would listen to Cozy 101, but I have not even turned them on this year. And yeah. they actually had a little controversy because. There is the song that has, especially within science fiction and fantasy, I've seen a lot of people complain about the past couple of years, which is that Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Yes.
And a lot of people object to the lyrics of that song. And so Cozy 101 had played it and they got some complaints from people. And so they decided to pull it from airplay this year. And they started getting complaints from people saying, why did you pull that song? We love that song. And so they did a poll of their listeners and they said, look, you know, tell us what you want. Just tell us, you know, does this song offend you or does this song not offend you? And you got to take these polls with a grain of salt. You never really know who's taking the poll, right? It's like the pollsters outside of voting areas, right? Some people will talk to them, some people won't. So you never know with these polls. But 95% of the people who responded to this poll loved that song and wanted it back. And so Cozy 101 put it back on the air.
Hmm. That's an interesting experiment doing the poll.
It was, yeah. And it's like, I know within our community, that would piss a lot of people off. Mm-hmm. They would have been far more happy to have that song pulled and stay pulled. And I even remember someone did a video a couple years ago that was a alternate version of that song where, you know, she says, I really must go. And he's like, oh, well, let me help you. Let me get you your coat. You know, I'm sorry. Oh, let me call you a cab, you know, and like completely changed the male side of the lyrics mm-hmm. on that. So so I know that's a big issue with a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that one come up. I've seen a couple of people post about that. And I feel like that's been probably a good 5 years at least now with that song. And they do play it on the radio station here. And at least three or four different versions of it too.
Mm, yeah. Well, it's one of the few songs that has a duet for the right. holidays. And so you always get male and female singers doing duets of that.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it. Like it's fine. Like
it's not my favorite song. There's
no
plenty
that's
of other
the
songs
thing.
Out there that I love.
Yeah. It's like I think it's, you know, I look, it's creepy. You know, I was thinking about it because
that's the word. Yes, it is.
It is creepy. Yeah. It's very creepy, whether you like the tune or not. And it's certainly offensive. And what I was thinking about, because one of my friends posted about how they liked that song and then it got on Facebook and then people were talking about it and everything. I was thinking about, because I was watching Dave Chappelle's, one of his recent Netflix comedy specials, and he was talking about Louis C.K. and like the trouble that Louis C.K. got into. And then Dave Chappelle started singing that one song from Grease. He's like, well, I don't know. And he's like, you don't think like we were all sitting around and be like, tell me more. and I was thinking, and as he's saying that, I'm like, that song is really bad in the same way. You know, so yeah, it's, I don't know. I think it's, you know, I think, yeah, I don't really weigh in on it either way. I think it's kind of a creepy song, but you know, it doesn't bother me, but it's, you know, it's, there's, as you said, there are a zillion Christmas songs. Yeah. So you know, we could do other ones.
Yeah, and my least favorite Christmas song, unfortunately, continues to be Paul McCartney's
Simply Having a Wonderful
Simply
Christmas.
Simply Having a Wonderful, yeah, I hate that song.
Because
it's the same lyrics over and over and over again.
Yes.
And it's not even a good tune. It's just an annoying song.
Yeah, that's and it's pretty dated sounding, that synth sound, that no. beow, 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 which I kind of like, but it's now that one that's bothered me in the past. That one I've kind of enjoyed hearing recently, but yeah, it's, well, McCartney is kind of guilty of that sometimes with his songs, that they're a little unfinished sometimes, meaning like, hey man, you should have wrote another verse to that, or you should, you know. Well, I, you know, I don't know, not that we need to get into a whole big discussion about the Beatles, but you know, I think it's, most people would agree that
McCartney's, I'd be quite prepared for that eventuality.
Yeah, but that, you know, McCartney and Lennon's, like, their best songs are with the Beatles, and it's because they were trying to impress each other. And you know, Lennon was considered the better lyric writer and McCartney was considered the better tune writer. But if you look at McCartney's tunes when he was with the Beatles, the lyrics were a lot better than when on the whole than when he was with Wings or on his own. And same thing with John. John's tunes were probably better when he was with the Beatles because he was trying to impress McCartney with his tune writing. And
well, I don't know if it was about being impressed, but there's also the idea of being challenged by someone else, right? So they're challenging each other to be better, and they're always trying to one up each other, right?
Right.
And they're trying to be the better songwriter today.
Right. And I think as you go further into the Beatles' career, they became more and more and more separate. I know early on they kind of did actually sit and write tunes together, but that kind of stopped pretty quickly. It's only their first few albums that are like that. But I think even if you get into the later albums, there are still, even though it's like a Paul song or a John song, there was often like a, oh, it's a Paul song, but John helped with the bridge and like wrote the bridge lyrics or something, or it's a Paul song or it's a John song, but, you know, Paul wrote the intro. Like, I think there was kind of a, you know, challenging each other and then kind of, hey, this isn't really working here. Like, how about we do this? And then, and that's why, I mean, I think that's a whole discussion about creativity, but I think that's why. So, do you want to get into some picks for the end of the year?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, so we're recording this early December. It's still holiday gift-giving and gift-shopping time. So we thought that we'd talk a little bit about some stuff that that people could, you know, potentially go out and get for friends and loved ones who are book lovers and readers and writers and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So one, do you have a pick first or do you want me to go first?
Do I have a pick? Well, you know what? I saw something. I did see something. So as we're recording this, yesterday was my mom's 77th birthday.
Wow.
And I was out getting a fancy dinner kind of for her, her favorite food, Red Lobster. And I had some time to kill. So I stepped into a Barnes & Noble. And I was walking through Barnes & Noble, and they have moved everything. They now, and I believe that they've moved everything because of Toys R Us. So Toys R Us died, and now the section in the back of the store that used to be for music, at least in this particular Barnes & Noble, is now a toy store. So throwing that out there first. So I was kind of thrown because I walk in and it used to be when you walked into this particular Barnes & Noble, you were presented immediately with toys and collectibles. And they replaced that with periodicals, magazines. And then the next section that blew me away, they had vinyl. So they had an actual vinyl records section. And you know, I was stunned by all this and I'm looking around and I'm going, where the hell did they move science fiction and fantasy to? And of course they moved it back to a far corner, you know, off the beaten path where no one will see it, of course. So I wove my way through and went back there and was looking around and I found something that I think some people, if they don't already know about it, and this kind of goes to our conversation about books as art. Do you remember Brent Weeks?
I do remember Brent Weeks.
Okay. So it's been a while since we've talked with Brent, but he's still out there writing books like crazy. His Night Angel trilogy has hit a 10th anniversary. Yes.
I saw you post about it. I saw you post that on Facebook.
Yes, yeah. I did. They've released an omnibus of the three books, and it's a massive hardcover. and it has black lettering on a black cover with black trimmed pages. You know how you can get special paper? You know, sometimes like the old encyclopedias had the gold trim on the pages, sure. on the edges. Mm-hmm. This is black on black on black. It's really, really cool. I mean, it's a striking book if you're looking at it. You know, it catches your eye immediately. You see this black cover, and as you move closer, you can see that there's black lettering on the cover and on the back and on the spine. And then the pages themselves are trimmed in black. It is a really nicely done book, piece of art, hardcover.
Nice. I was just thinking of a Spinal Tap, and it's like, if you look at this cover and you think, can this get any more black? And it can get none more black. Right? Am I like making that up? Or that's from Spinal Tap, right? Because they had like the one offensive album cover and then they just made it all black.
I don't know, like, but it
sounds
good.
None more black, yeah. So I wonder if that's why Brent had that on, because, you know, he's giving a
I have no idea, but it's a pretty freaking cool book, all things considered.
Cool. So that's going to be a recommendation, is to go and get Brent Weeks's Night Angel Trilogy Omnibus?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's a good one, because that is, as we spoke about a couple times recently, we were talking about sort of our reading. That is one of many series where I read book one and liked it a lot and want to read the other books and have not read them. And I probably read that book 10 years ago. Maybe not quite 10 years ago, but, well, that was the Night Angel Trilogy. So is that Orbit? Did they...
Probably.
I want to say it was Orbit, but I'm not. Okay. Either way,
because he has the Night Angel, and then he has the Black Prism.
Right. They're not connected, right? There was a
no.
Different,
as
right?
far as I know, they're not.
Yeah. No, but with Night Angel, I want to say that was at the time, and I know they've done that since then too. But there was that strategy of releasing three books from a trilogy within a month or two of each other. Was that the case with the Night Angel trilogy? I feel like it was, but I could be wrong about that.
I don't remember. However, I will say that one of the big supporters of that series and of Brent was Borders Bookstore.
Okay.
So a lot of the initial book sales for that series came from Borders. Borders got really behind Brent and those books and had huge displays and really sold a lot of those books for him. So I remember that. And I also remember, not only did I read the first book, they did a graphics novel adaptation that I covered for Kirkus.
Oh.
So there was also a Kirkus article somewhere. It's probably still out there somewhere where I talked about the graphic novel version.
Interesting. You know what I remember about, it's probably about 10 years ago that I read it, or 9 years ago or 8 years ago, sometime soon. But that, the first book in that series, which I don't know the name of off the top of my head, but the first book is the first ebook that I ever read.
Oh, wow.
And I read it on my computer. I read it on a laptop.
Didn't have a Kindle yet.
And I don't think I'd have to, we didn't have one at least anyway, but I'm not even sure if iPads were around yet.
No, I think they were.
You think so?
Yeah.
We didn't have an iPad at the time.
They were considered an expensive toy, I believe, when they first launched for a lot of people.
Yeah. We didn't get one until a few years after that. And smartphones would have been around, but I was kind of late to the game on smartphones anyway. Like, I didn't get an iPhone until a couple of years after everybody else. So, so I just read that on a laptop. Like, I just would open up my laptop and read it, and that's how I did it. And I think, I want to say it was free. Like, it was a free ebook, or like a dollar or something. But I want to say I got it for free somewhere.
The first one, like, was free, little boy?
Yeah, no, like legit. Like, I didn't pirate it or anything. It was like some kind of promotion.
No, I'm saying, the first one's free.
Yeah, so.
And then once you're hooked, you buy all the rest of them.
Well, and it's funny, I did buy the second book, because it's funny you mentioned Borders, because at the time Borders was doing a lot of, because it's all pre-ebook for me, that I was, I guess, and it was even before, or did we were just starting to do the podcast, so we weren't getting a lot of books yet, because I bought the second book in that trilogy as a paperback, because I feel like Borders at the time would have like sales where if you bought a paperback, you got like the second paperback for half price or something, or they have like a really good discount. So if it was like an $8.99 paperback, you know, if you had this coupon, it got it down to like $4.99 or $5.99. So I feel like I went through a phase where I bought a bunch of paperbacks from Borders. So I bought the second book. I just never read it. I have that paperback sitting somewhere. I don't know where it is now, but it's somewhere around here. But cool.
I believe I've got all three paperbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I also have all three ebooks.
Cool.
I read the first one. I will say this, and you know, Brent has been very candid about this. And now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think the three books came out at the same time, because I remember going to a book signing for the third book, and meeting him and his wife, and we went out for tacos.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. And then I think I gave them a ride to the airport. So I don't think the books came out all at the same time. They may have come out, you know, 1 year after 1 year after 1 year, or something like that. I'm not 100% sure on that at this point. But the violence in that book, in that first book, was pretty, pretty, we'll say impactful and disturbing for me, at least. And it's incredibly well written. It's a really good story. I was just, you know, wow. Wow. And so I think that's why I slowed myself down and didn't go into the second book. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with the book. I mean, trust me, it's a great book. Just, I wasn't prepared for the violence.
Yeah, I remember it being a pretty brutal
book. Well, and it's about an assassin, so it should be, right? It's like a sword and sorcery kind of assassin kind of book. So you should have, Patrick, expected there to be, you know, that level of violence. And for whatever reason, I just wasn't expecting it. And it hit me kind of wrong. So great book, great story, great characters. He built a great world with it. Obviously, you know, continued on in the series. It just, for me, that's the only reason why I didn't go on. And now I'm thinking about it kind of almost nostalgically and going, man, I need to get into the second and third book.
Yeah. Well, that's where I'm at now with fiction. I'm trying to like go back and finish some of these series that, that I started years ago,
yeah,
and try to knock some of those off. Of course, I'm reading Kings of the Wild by Nicholas Eames, which is book one of a new series. So there you go. I don't learn from what I was going to. My sort of recommendation for the year combines my love of books and my love of music. And I think I did this as a pick at some point this year. And it's a book called The History of Jazz. The author's name is Ted. I think you pronounce his last name Gioia, but it's G-I-O-I-A. So Ted Gioia, G-I-O-I-A. And he's written quite a few music books and quite a bunch of them on jazz. And I listened to this as an audiobook. And it was one of those, you know, 25-hour audiobooks. And really one of the first nonfiction audiobooks that I, or recent nonfiction audiobooks that I have listened to. And it really launched me into getting super into listening to jazz this year. And I've been focusing on bass this year. And I actually got hold of an upright bass from one of my colleagues at school. And I have an upright bass at school, and I practice my upright bass for a half hour every morning before the school day starts. And it's super hard. It's really difficult, and I sound like very amateur-ish on it. So, but that's part of the learning process. That's another whole story. But it's clearly this book that has sent me on the path that I've been on for the past 6 months or so. It's a great distillation of the jazz music that's out there. I think some people are interested in jazz and they've heard some of it, and they know like the big names. They know Miles Davis, and they know Dizzy Gillespie and John Coltrane and what have you. This is a great book for showing how all that stuff developed, the order that it developed in, the big artists, maybe some of the overlooked artists, And it gives you a real kind of blueprint for exploring this music. And so you combine this with your favorite streaming service, and you just be like, hey, let me check out Paul Desmond, or let me check out whoever that maybe you don't know too much about, but now you read a chapter about them in this book. And it just really has sent me down the rabbit hole of jazz. So I loved it. The audiobook is great. Very well done. This is one of those books that I'll probably end up picking up the hardcover as well, because it is almost, it's not an encyclopedia, because it is just like a, but it's like a big history book. And I imagine having the physical book would be a good thing too. So again, it's just really my two passions, music and books. So I'm going to, yeah, because I don't know. I think it is. Because, like, you know, you and I talk about, I know you like all the big band stuff and you like Harry Connick Jr. And so there are, I bet you there are areas that it's like, I've heard of that and I bet that's cool, but I don't really know where to, that's the problem. Where do you start? Like, where do you, and what you learn by this is that there are certain eras that you may gravitate towards, and then you know, oh, well, I like 60s cool jazz, and that's you know, that's Jerry Mulligan and Chet Baker, and I bet if I find those things, those are albums that I like. And or I like bebop and I want to hear Charlie Parker, and you know, so there's all sorts of stuff, areas that you can go into, and then you could just get into some super niche. And that's kind of, I mentioned the cool jazz, like Jerry Mulligan and Chet Baker, that's like kind of a subgenre niche that I really ended up liking a lot. So I'm spending a lot of time listening to that. So it's great. So if you're interested in it at all, it's good. And it's a good ebook. I mean, it's a good, like I said, it's a good audiobook too. So
the history of jazz.
Uh-huh.
How is it organized? I mean, does it just jump all over the place?
No, it's
think about it.
Yeah. Nice. Very good. Very good. It's chronological. It's chronological. It starts from the beginning, and
I'm just teasing you, John.
No, I know, no, but you're right, because no, because some of these books are, because this guy wrote another book which I haven't read yet, but I do want to get into, and I was gonna get the audio book of it, but I don't think this other book would work as an audio book because it is, I think it's just called Jazz Standards, and as you know, there's a repertoire of songs that are considered jazz standards, and they come from all over the place. A lot of it is Broadway songs that people ended up improvising over. And so I think this book, maybe it's called 1,000 Jazz Standards. I don't know. Mm. It's a lot. And that is an encyclopedia, and that is alphabetical order. So it's like, you know, I think there's a standard called All the Things You Are. So it'll be All the Things You Are. It was written this time, became popular with this version. Here are 10 versions that are considered, you know, the classic versions of it. And it gives like five paragraphs on it or whatever, two or three pages on each song. And that I feel would not work as an audiobook, because that's like just someone reading you a list. So I don't think that would be. So that's why when I looked at the physical book in the store, and I'm like, ooh, I don't want to, the audiobook is not going to work for this one. So I'll just buy this book eventually. And that's more of a, you know, a book, like a reference book almost more than anything else, you know?
Yeah.
But this one's chronological. So,
and you mentioned Harry Connick, and I got into Harry Connick, I think, with a lot of other people because of When Harry Met Sally.
Mm-hmm.
He did that whole soundtrack. They actually played the music and did videos on MTV, and mm-hmm. that kind of launched his career. And I did get into his music. I also love Michael Bublé, and I think that you know Michael Bublé is really good. He's got that smooth voice and. But the one that surprised me that I've listened to recently, because I was doing the jazz holiday music, and she kept popping up over and over, Martina McBride.
Yeah, I almost mentioned her before because there's a version of the song we were talking about at the beginning of the show with Dean Martin, obviously. So I'm assuming they just took an old Dean Martin track and then she sang, because I don't remember when Dean Martin died, but he hasn't been around for a while, I don't think. Maybe he was still around, but I don't think that's a new recording of Dean Martin singing. I think that was hey, we got this track of Dean Martin. Why don't we put Martina McBride on it?
Yeah, kind of like how they did the Natalie Cole.
Yeah.
And Nat King Cole. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so are her albums, her holiday albums, kind of jazzy?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Even though she's a country artist, that's cool.
They are. So that was really good. Those kept popping up in that playlist.
Mm-hmm.
But. One of my favorite, this is going way off field, but one of my favorite Harry Connick Jr. albums is actually one that he recorded before he became big, which I think is called, it's either 15 or 20 or 21. Because he used to name his albums based on his age.
Okay.
And it's just him on a piano, and he brings in a few other people like Dr. John.
Okay.
You know, other New Orleans folks,
right.
and singing these songs, and I just love that album. That's one of my favorite albums to this day.
Cool, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right, what's another thing that you can recommend people here?
You know, I'm gonna stick with music a little bit here and talk about I a few days ago, for the benefit of the listeners, a few days ago I sent John some texts asking him if he knew anything about D'Angelico guitars.
No.
I went to a local used guitar store, so I didn't go to Guitar Center or any of the big chainy kind of places. I went to a local place here in Aurora called Music Go Round, and I was specifically looking for something for my brother for Christmas. He had expressed that he had really been wanting a Telecaster again, and so I went looking for a Telecaster for him, and I found one, and I got it for him for Christmas. And don't worry about it spoiling it; he already knows because there was no way to sneak it past him into the house. But while I was there, I also went into the acoustic room, and which was a huge, massive mistake. And fell in love with this guitar and ended up buying it. And as I've mentioned to John in the past, I've been a chord guy and a rhythm guy for a really long time. I don't really do lead. I've never been able to wrap my head around that. And so one of the things I wanted to do with this new guitar was, because it's just got such a great sound and great tone, I'd like to learn more lead kind of stuff. And since I've been, last few years, I've been enjoying bluegrass music, I was thinking about, you know, trying to get into bluegrass a little bit as well. So I've got this, I've got the iPad now that I've been using for writing, and I thought, well, I wonder if there are any guitar apps out there, you know, that could teach some lead or some bluegrass or something like that. And I looked it up and it popped right up. And I don't know if you've heard of this, John. It's called Fender Play.
I've used their tuner online, like, because I just put bass tuner in one day and it took me to a Fender site so you could tune up your bass to like the website. So I'm assuming it's probably part of that in some way.
It kind of sort of is. It's an app that you pick your path. What type of instrument are you going to play? You know, electric guitar, acoustic guitar, bass guitar, mandolin. And so it's got all these different options, right? All the stuff that Fender makes. And once you pick your instrument, then you pick your path. What kind of music do you want? You know, rock, country, jazz, blues, so on and so forth. And then once you do that, you're presented with lessons that start with very, very basic stuff and progress through teaching you all about how to play guitar and play the type of music that you want to play.
Right.
And it starts off with, you know, basic stuff like, you know, how to finger the fretboard and where to put your fingers for this or that. It walks you through some basic exercises. It does basic chords. And then, you know, the fourth or fifth lesson is you kind of put all that stuff together and you play this really quick little melody. And then it just takes you through the stages like that. It's pretty cool. It's all video, but it's not free.
Okay.
It has a 14-day free trial. It does have the tuner and all that kind of stuff built into it, so you can tune. It's got a bass tuner. It's got the guitar tuner. It's got all the different kinds of stuff in there. And it's neat. If you're thinking about trying to get into an instrument, and specifically, obviously, a guitar, this is a great little app for you to use. Now, it is tied to your Apple, at least on iPad. It's tied to your Apple ID. So you have to agree to start the 14-day trial, and then in 14 days, it's going to charge you for something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Through your Apple account. And it has two options. It's either going to charge you month to month, which I believe is $9.99, so $10 a month, Or, and you have to pick this in the beginning. You have to pick which one you want. Or it'll do the annual thing, which ends up being like $7.50 a month. But you have to pay it all up front. Boom.
Right.
And then you also get 10% off on all Fender products.
Oh, well, that's cool.
So it's this neat little app. I'm playing around with it, learning some stuff through it, and it's a little bit more difficult because of where I am as a guitar player. You know, I gotta hunt through it to see where to go. But I think if you were starting fresh, it provides a really good step-by-step learn how to play.
Nice.
And I know that kind of that cuts into you as a guitar teacher, as a music teacher.
No.
But I still think it's a really cool tool.
No, I have had some good teachers in my life. However, I feel like so much of my learning on whatever instrument or whatever music thing that I got into, whether it be songwriting or composition or altered tunings or the mandolin or the bouzouki or now the bass, like I feel like so much of learning is self-directed learning and learning on your own. And I think that's one of the great things about the technology and the internet that we have now, is that you can find so much of this stuff. I mean, if anything, it's probably a little overwhelming because you don't know where to start. But I was so hungry for resources like that, that I would always just hunt down. Like I would go to music stores and just really pour over the various methods and books that they had, and VHS and DVDs and things like that, and try to find, because they were not cheap. I mean, and I wasn't never really into like just getting song books. It would always be, here's how you learn this technique, or here's how you do this thing. They were at least $20, at least. Sometimes they were a lot more than that. So you only had a certain amount of budget. It wasn't like, oh, I'll just watch a bunch of YouTube videos and learn this thing. It was, you had to like really decide where you wanted to put your money for the next month or couple months while you were working on something. But I think that's really kind of, for me, that's always been what's been great about learning, is getting interested in something, trying to find the resources, and then working on it. It all comes down to how much time you're willing to put into working on it. Now, where I say a teacher will help is steering you in the right direction, making sure that you're, in terms of technique especially, are doing things properly. Because I know that's even, I'm probably at some point, like I said, I was doing the upright bass stuff, but fairly soon I would like to find an upright teacher. I don't think I want to go and take lessons every week, but I was thinking of maybe trying to find somebody, and I have a colleague who's a good bass player, so I may like just search him out. Even if I do a lesson with him once a month, or you know, once every couple of weeks, I would like to start doing that, because I'm learning all this stuff and I'm like, I'm not sure if I'm even doing this the right way. Like, so I don't want to like spend a year working on this and then have someone look and be like, dude, your technique is all off. Like, no, and it could be, because playing upright bass is so different. It's so different. Like, you have to hold your hands in a different position, and it's, you got to press down a lot harder. And I might be pressing on the wrong angle. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different things that I can be doing wrong. So it's more of to prevent me from doing the wrong thing and then having to unlearn stuff than it is that, oh, he needs to show me what a diminished arpeggio is. I know what all that stuff is. You know, I've been playing for 25 years or coming up on 30 years now. Like, I know music theory. I know my scales. I know all that stuff. It's the specific technique to this instrument that I don't know. So I need someone to assure me that I'm not making horrible mistakes, is really what it comes down to. So that's where I think teachers are valuable. But I think ultimately, if you don't want to put the practice in, or if you don't have a curiosity about wanting to do it, where you are going to find this stuff out, like you're explaining, then it's really hard to learn anything. Right. You got to want to have that drive. And I think it comes down to curiosity. It's like, that's so cool. How can I do that? So you said you're into the bluegrass. So now, like, that's the thing. And I have, you know, off air, I'll have to get your address again, because I know I got into that at one point too. I have at least one book. It's probably sitting in the closet at school of, you know, bluegrass songs to play on acoustic guitar. And I got
it's
probably pretty hard, but, but I think it has the tab and the regular music and you could slow it down and there's probably like a CD with it and everything. So
yeah, that'd be awesome.
Just sitting in the back. So if I don't remind me and, or just email me your address and I'll dig through school and I'll see if I can send it to you. Cause it's probably been sitting in the back of my school for 10 years now.
And then there's a Harry Connick song. I want to say it's A Mockingbird Sang in Berkeley Square. Mm. I remember that line from the song. That might be the name of it. And I remember it having a, an upright bass that was really good in it. And I want to say it starts off with it almost. And, mm-hmm. and so that's a really good bass song.
Cool. Cool.
To look up. Look that one up. A Mockingbird Sang in Berkeley Square. A Mockingbird Sang. Go ahead.
Nice. All right. Well, I think we have
Berkeley Square.
Maybe I'll do one more.
You got time
more.
For one more. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do one more. So I'm going to pick an author who I love. I know I've picked his books in the past. But I've reread some of his books over the past year. And this author is Chuck, I always say Klosterman, but I think you pronounce it Klosterman. You spell it K-L-O-S-T-E-R-M-A-N, Chuck Klosterman. You see him write for even some of the sports sites and stuff, but I think he could be best described as a pop culture writer. Been around for a long time now. He's, I think, our age or a little older, very much of our generation in terms of the things that he writes about and the things that he connects. And it's this thinking very seriously and very deeply about kind of the pop culture, music, TV shows, movies, what have you, that are very specific to our generation. And he takes the subject matter very seriously, but he's a very funny writer at the same time. I would recommend, he's probably got 6-7 books out at this point. He's got some fiction out, which I haven't read his fiction, but I've read all of his nonfiction, which they're basically just books of essays about a particular topic. And I'll throw his two first ones, which are probably still my two favorite ones, although I like everything that he's written. One is called Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, A Low Culture Manifesto. That, I believe, is the first book of his that I read. And the other one is called Fargo Rock City. And he grew up in North Dakota.
I feel like you picked that at some point.
I'm sure I did because I love them. They've played such an important part of my adult life. It's like the first time, or one of the first times where it was okay to like hair metal and Star Wars, and having someone write very deeply and intelligently and with a great sense of humor about these things that meant so much to me, that I felt, you know, we live in this geek world now where it's okay. Well, notwithstanding all the Star Wars backlash in the past year, but pre that, we've lived in a world where it's like, it's very okay to admit that you like Star Wars. Whereas I know, you know, there was a time when you kind of didn't talk about that, liking that, or, well, you know, you had a couple of your little friends that you did, but it was like not a cool thing to like.
There's a chunk of my family that still says, oh, that's space shit. I don't, you know, I grew right. up, I don't do that shit.
So you have that. And then you throw in my beloved 80s hair metal. Look, by the time I got to college, that stuff was already passe. And it was, and I didn't like grunge. There's some grunge I have grown to like over the years, but to me, like Nirvana and Soundgarden, like they destroyed the music that I love, and I didn't like it. So here is a guy who's smart and makes all these connections between these various things and just really celebrates all these wonderful things. And so these essays are fantastic. So Fargo Rock City is specifically about him growing up in North Dakota as a metalhead and like loving Motley Crue and Skid Row and Poison and Def Leppard and all that kind of stuff. And it's, that's his first book. And I love that one. So if you love hair metal, get that. Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs is more of a collection of essays. He's got a great one on Star Wars where he's like, oh, you know how everybody loves Han Solo and every boy says like, oh, I always loved Han Solo. He was my favorite character. He's like, bullshit. Everybody loved Luke. Because when you're, and it's true because I loved Luke as a kid. And it's like, because when you're 10, you haven't learned yet that, you know, sarcasm and aloofness and what have you are desirable traits. You're the, you know, you're the star-eyed farm boy. Like, that's what you are. And I was like, wow, he's right. You know, so he's just like wrote very deeply. He's got a chapter about Saved by the Bell that will, yes, the Saved by the Bell show yep. that was with Zach Morris that'll like more intelligence than really Saved by the Bell deserves. But it's it's just great. Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa is awesome. I love it. So those start with those two if you're interested in any of this stuff. But I'm just a huge fan of Chuck Klosterman. So and you won't be disappointed with anything. If you're, I think if you kind of like what Patrick and I like and sort of talking, well, what we would hope is to be intelligently about these kind of subjects and making connections between them. I think you can't go wrong with any of this stuff. So that is my other holiday gift.
Very cool. Yeah. So the last holiday gift that I would mention in the last couple of minutes that we have here is, you know, the best gift that you could possibly give would be backing us on patreon.com.
Yes. Yes. You like what we do. Oh, that was smooth. You've been doing this for almost 10 years. You think we would be, you would hope we would be that good at it. So yeah, as Patrick said, if you dig what we do, consider going over to patreon.com/functionalnerds. It helps. It really does.
Yeah, but I just paid the hosting, the quarterly hosting. I just paid, for Zencastr that we use.
Yeah.
And I just paid for our audio hosting that we, for the Dropbox.
Yeah.
For the files that Zencastr creates. So, you know, there's three bills right there that normally would hit me this time of year and I just have to pay them out of pocket. And thanks to our backers, I was able to pay those with funds that, came through our Patreon.
Yeah. So we thank you a lot. And I will say this about it too. I'm not sure how long we've been using Patreon, a couple years now, at least. We've mentioned before how anytime Patrick and I know, you know, there have been times where one of us has been like, oh, should we continue on with the podcast? Like, I don't know if I want to do it anymore. And it was always a kind of a thing where when one of us was down, the other one was up. We were never both down at the same time. But I have to say, since we've had Patreon, I feel like that's not come up at all. I feel like we've never, so my point is that knowing that there are people out there that value the show so much that they're willing to give us some money every month to keep it going, I think those thoughts don't even enter my mind anymore. And it's just like, no, I like doing the show. People like listening to the show. And we're financially backed so that we can do the show. So let's just keep doing the show. So yep. I don't know. So it makes a difference. It does. So thank you so much. And Patrick, anything else you want to leave people with before we go?
Tomorrow is Elseworlds. So we're going to have to talk about that eventually.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Smoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.